Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 39. On this week's show, we review the brand new release of The Jungle Book. To my left is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
Going around the table is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
And to my right is Scott. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
And live via Skype is Unleash the Magics and the Stage Door podcast, Maria Raboli. Say hello, Maria.
Hello, Maria.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. All right, that was No Worries. You can catch that video and more over at youtube.com/pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/pogomix, and his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at lastgenpodcast, and specifically for this show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That is D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, you can find our little group if you search for Disney Magic Hour. And on iTunes, if you hop on over there, hit subscribe and give a 5-star review. We will read it live on the air. And we do have another review this week that we will read at the conclusion of the show. So thank you very much for that and coming up later. All right. This week is a nice, straightforward episode. We're not going back in time, although I guess kind of we are. We'll probably touch on it, but we are going to review the brand new release of the live action version of The Jungle Book. And I want to first, actually, say hello, Maria. How are you? And welcome back to our show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here to talk about this movie.
Well, tell everybody also now, we've kind of, you know, we've partnered up over the last couple of weeks or whatnot, almost maybe, you know, like 2-3 weeks now. And why don't you let everybody know about the other shows that they can find you at?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me and Tom in your Last Gen podcast family. We're very excited to be with you guys. And yay! I'm throwing confettis in the air right now while I'm saying this. yes, we do have two other podcasts. One is the Unleash the Magic podcast. It's another Disney podcast all about, we discuss the news that come out of Disney and all the parks, movies, all the fun stuff. And then we also have another one that is called The Stage Door podcast, where with Tom we discuss theater, film, TV, review everything that's going on right now. And we also do a lot of interviews with actors and directors. So it's a lot of fun.
Great. And everyone, if you want to, you can go find those shows. Go to lastgenpodcast.com. There are windows for all of our podcasts on there. You just click on the image and you will be brought there. And you will find a new one added as of last night. I mean, well, granted, you're listening to this on Monday. We're recording on Sunday. But late Saturday night, we activated another page for the Final Score podcast, which is a totally sports-based podcast for all you sports fans out there that is hosted by Andrew Claudio. And you will find that at lastgenpodcast.com as well. So, and actually, this week, his guest is none other than the Film Basement's Kevin Scott. So I'm assuming it's explicit. I don't know. I don't really know.
Yeah, I think first 2 minutes it
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, I didn't listen to it yet.
No.
Okay, all right. Well, let's get into this film. This is now the third entry, I would say, into the live-action quote-unquote remakes, because Maleficent is not a remake. It was a retelling of a story we never heard before.
Yeah.
And we also had Kenneth Branagh's Cinderella, which was not only well-received, it also did well. Like, Maleficent made money, but it wasn't received well.
Yeah, no.
And now we have Jon Favreau's Jungle Book, which has come out publicly to very popular, very positive reviews, and it did really well at the box office. I know it made around like $40 million or $35 million on Friday.
I think $88 million was the last that I saw that had made through the weekend.
For the weekend?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
I'll double check while you're talking. But
all right. Well, just to give you a little bit on this, it was written by Justin Marks and then obviously largely based on the book by Rudyard Kipling. And the cinematography, I think, is something of note because it was done by Bill Pope, who you would maybe remember from the Matrix trilogies. Remember, even though the movie's garbage, it still looks great. He's not in charge of CGI, so all the garbage CGI in that is not his fault. Scott Pilgrim, which I still think is one of the best comic book films ever made. And he also did the DPing for Cosmos, the TV show that was hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson just recently.
Which was gorgeous also.
Which was, very gorgeous. A lot of lot of really well done production into that one. Yeah. And now we have a CGI live action mix. And just to give you a little bit on the filming, because I was curious of it, it was filmed on blue screen sets with partial environments. So if Mowgli, as played by Neil Setti, is sitting on a rock, he's sitting on a rock. Mm-hmm. And then somebody in a bodysuit that's cut out to look like an animal or whatnot would be there as well.
Yeah.
But the VO was done in separate booths. It was done in recording booths for mm-hmm. the actors who were not on stage. And this cast is, I mean, Favreau gets casts. Like, he does not joke around. In Chef alone, he has Scarlett Johansson and
Dustin Hoffman,
Robert Downey Jr.,
Sofia Vergara, John Leguizamo.
That's what I was trying to think of. And
Oliver Platt.
What's our guy's name from the Boardwalk Empire, though? The nutcase. Bobby Cannavale,
yeah.
Love him. So in this film, I'm just going to run it down because it's that good. Bill Murray is Baloo. Sir Ben Kingsley is Bagheera. Idris Elba is Shere Khan. Lupita Nyong'o is Raksha. Scarlett Johansson is Ka. Giancarlo Esposito, if you don't recognize that name right away, he's Gus from Breaking Bad. That might hit with a lot of people right away. He's Raksha. I'm sorry, he's Akila. Christopher Walken is King Louis, something we definitely are going to talk about. And then some of the little smaller roles that maybe you're not aware of. Gary Shandling voices the porcupine, Icky, who I want to say this was his last working voice role. And then Jon Favreau himself voices the pygmy hog. He's the one who was like, that's mine, that rock is mine. And Sam Raimi plays a giant squirrel because Sam Raimi.
No, the porcupine was the one that's mine. The pygmy hog was the one with the honey that Baloo.
Yes, sorry about that. Yes, had that backwards. So this was a very big, very expensive made film, and the trailers got everyone very excited. Now we're going to just go into how we feel about the movie in the overall sense and lightly touch on little details here and there. Yes.
Before we get into it, I just checked, and Deadline said as of today, it's about $103 million that it took in.
Okay,
as of the end of today.
Good.
Which is Sunday.
That's really good. There's a lot of remakes coming out from Disney and a lot of live action stuff, and they're not all going to be great, but you know, so far they're off to a good start, and then we'll figure out what we thought about this one. So it had a lot of star power behind it. Favreau, of course, started off on Swingers, but then he really hit it big when Iron Man came out. That was like his re-emerging party, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And it's out there. It's made a lot of money. But what do we think about it? So we're going to talk just with our basic thoughts, and then I will announce, like, okay, we're going to go into spoiler territory, and then we will go into spoiler territory. And if you look at the show notes right now, I have that time that eventually it becomes in the show notes. So if you know, you'll have a good idea of when you want to maybe jump off and not hear anymore. So let's just start with Melissa. What did you think overall is of the film?
Overall, I really liked it. You know, for a remake from an animated film, I thought it would be, you know, I was unsure of how it would go about, but I was pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed the entire film, and I would highly recommend someone go and see it. And we saw it in 3D, and I actually really appreciate that.
All right, great. I should have, ladies first. Maria, what did you think of the film?
I agree with Melissa. I loved it. I was pleasantly surprised. I wasn't expecting it to be that good, but I really, really enjoyed it. I think he has a very different mood and texture from the Disney Jungle Book that we all know and love. I think it's much darker, but I really, really enjoyed it. I thought Jon Favreau did a great, great job. He's a great storyteller, and I thought he knocked it out of the park.
Brian, what did you think?
I loved it. I thought Neil Setti, that's how you pronounce his name?
Mm-hmm. I believe so, right? Neil Setti. I mean, I know the second half is Setti. I'm assuming the first one is Neil.
Yeah, I believe so. The one who played Mowgli, he was fantastic. He knocked it out of the park. He was really good. It was for a movie with one actor, like one real-life actor, and the rest animated characters, it was a very human film, you know? Had a lot of love, a lot of great... A lot of care went into this movie, you could tell, and Favreau really understands, I think, the what makes the story a good story.
Yeah.
Besides just the amazing visuals, the story itself was really fantastic, and I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, this was when we did our episode about, you know, the previews for all the ones that were coming out this year. This was my, you know, my number one besides the Marvel ones. And it definitely did, it exceeded my expectations, even though it was my top priority.
Yeah.
It was great. I, going on what Brian said, I saw an interview with the actor who played Mowgli, and he said that that was the most difficult part is, you know, he's on stage by himself.
Yeah.
Besides, like, you know, cast members and puppets and stuff like that, but to see the job that he did, it's hard enough being a kid and, you know, being an actor at that age, but he did amazing.
Yeah, it's, you know, to act against, not acting against anybody for the most part. I mean, it's just, I thought it was amazing the job he did. Yeah.
And I think that all goes very heavily to the director,
I think,
and
so
Jon
too.
Favreau. I think, yeah, Favreau is a very, he films with his heart.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, I agree.
I think that that helps his films immensely have a different feel. In other words, you might go in cynical to some films and then get proven wrong. I think this is better than the original. That's my in the pocket review. Is I think it's a stronger film than the 1960-70 animated film. Mm-hmm. It has a better finish. It's a more satisfying finish. It feels more mythic because it leans more on the book by Kipling. If you've never read the book by Rudyard Kipling, it may not be what you're expecting. And I don't mean that as in it's ultra violent or, you know, whatever. It's just written with poetry. Like, it's a lot of it's prose. And it's very smartly written, you know. So when I watch the Disney film, while I enjoy it, I kind of feel like it's such a watered-down version, which is what you expect from a family film and whatnot. But this is a family film. And I don't feel that way anymore. I feel that this is a stronger mythical story. I'm more interested in the characters, and it looks incredible. This movie shouldn't look as convincing as it does. From the word go, when we see Mowgli bounding through the jungle, mm-hmm, I remember thinking, I was like, I feel like this kid is actually running through a jungle.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I know he's not. Like, my brain knows that he's not.
Yeah.
But it felt like he was. Mm-hmm. So, my quick in-the-pocket review is I think it's a stronger film, actually, than a 1967 one, and it keeps all of its charm while making it feel more risk for the main character, Mowgli, and others involved, because of the work of Idris Elba as Shere Khan.
Yeah.
Every character in this version, for me, is a more complex, interesting character than the one in the original.
Oh, definitely.
And that starts... That goes from Ka to King Louis to everything. It just works better for me as a film. So I think if the other live action films are going to be near this in quality, it's a high bar. Now they've really set a high bar. Now. And the next live action, does anyone know what the next one's scheduled to come? Is it Beauty and the Beast?
I believe so.
Are you counting Reluctant Dragon?
No, of course we are. Okay, yeah.
Not Reluctant Dragon, Peach Dragon, the other dragon.
You know, yeah, Peach Dragon definitely counts. You're right. That's later this year. Yeah. So that would be the next one.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know very much about that yet, even with the small reveal of what what Elliot's going to look like. But a very high bar has been set right now, and I think that this will become, I think that is an instant Disney classic film. I really do.
I agree.
I just think it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I agree too. This surpasses the original for me.
And you will never probably hear me utter this phrase more than five times. Go see this in 3D. It is so good in 3D.
Yeah.
It's so good. We actually went to the IMAX 3D showing. Granted, it's a fake IMAX screen out here. It's not really the true IMAX size. But the 3D felt immersive. It felt rich. And then during the credits, it's really playful, which if I saw that first in 2D, knowing it was 3D, I'd be like, I feel like I'm missing out on something.
Yeah. Well, I saw it in 2D, and I was like, I bet you this looks great in 3D, the closing credits and stuff. Yeah. I'm like, there's so much going on.
It was really, really impressive. And they also do something very interesting during the credits that, you know, we'll get into eventually. So, Maria, actually, I want to pose that question towards you. Mm-hmm. If I put in front of you right now a copy of the 1967 animated film, mm-hmm, and a brand new spanking Blu-ray 3D copy of Jon Favreau's Jungle, I'm calling it Jon Favreau's Jungle Book because, mm-hmm, this is his film. Like, this feels Jon Favreau from the way that he's matured as a filmmaker. Which one do you lean towards? I mean, not that I'm really, I don't think that we have to pit these against each other, but I'm just, mm-hmm, curious of what your reaction would be.
It's interesting because it's I would probably pick the Jump for Royal, the Jungle Book, just because I enjoy more the darkness in the movie that it was not in the original one. But they're just, in a way, they're very different. One is a kid's movie, you know, is a cartoon from Disney, and it has that sweetness that Disney had at that time, that it's a classic, and I enjoy that. I enjoyed Baloo in the original. I think it's very sweet. So it's kind of hard to compare the two. I will probably be in two different moods to watch the movie. Probably the Disney cartoon would be in a, you know, a lazy afternoon, just at home watching a Disney cartoon, and the Jon Favreau is just something that I would watch again to just notice more things, because I feel like I missed on a few things. Also, as a director, I'm interested in the way he shot it. But so I found it very inspiring, his movie. So,
Scott, you got a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Did you bring your son to this?
I didn't.
You didn't?
Okay. I didn't.
Would you?
Now that I've seen it,
how,
yes.
And how old is he?
5.
He's 5.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be worried at all about him getting scared at certain moments or anything? Or
no, because I felt like this movie, it kind of like brings into real life. I mean, obviously it's not a cartoon, but it brings into real life risk and danger, you know, that at 5 years old, I don't think he understands, like, you know, if you told him, oh, you know, what do you think of tigers? He'd be like, oh, they're cute. No, they're not.
Well, they are, but they will.
They
kill
are, but
you.
They will kill you.
They have the opportunity to kill you. They
exactly. Yeah, like, and I feel like that's something that this movie's done. That, you know, would he be scared? I mean, yeah, I jumped a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At certain parts, and I even knew they were coming, and I still jumped.
There's a behind the scenes video that I watched earlier today, and there was a moment when Mowgli had to respond from something attacking him from behind. And to make the moment work, Favreau just snuck up behind him and scared the living shit out of him.
Yeah, I saw that also. Yeah. I saw that.
And it reminded me of things that Spielberg has been known to do to try to get performances out of younger children. If you ever watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind, let's just use one example. There's a scene where the young boy goes downstairs and you never see what he's looking at, but you hear what you assume to be an alien messing about in the fridge and with the front, the little doggy door on the door, basically, and you hear a flap, and the boy's eyes kind of light up. And what you don't know is that on the other side of the camera is Spielberg in a gorilla costume, like, you know, just making him, you know, react to that. And the other one, the kid is looking up in the sky and he says, toys, as he's looking at the UFOs flying through the sky. Spielberg is on a ladder opening a present slowly so the kid reacts to it.
Yeah.
And I think Favreau has that same kind of touch.
Yeah.
With working with young talent. So actually I want to go over to Brian also. Your son is older.
Yeah, my son's 9. We went to see it together.
Oh, you
actually
did go.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And he loved the movie. And this is for him, this is like the highest praise he could have gave it. He said that was almost as good as Star Wars.
Oh wow.
he said that was almost as good as Star Wars. He said that was he sat still for 2 hours, which does not happen.
Yeah.
You know, he's not the annoying kid in the theater, but he'll get a little fidgety and stuff like that, but he didn't. He was glued to his chair. He loved it.
Melissa, what if I asked you the same question I asked Maria, if I put in, well, I mean we have it, you know, if I put in front of you the animated classic and eventually when we own it, you know, I said, like, we can watch one of these right now. Do you want to watch the Favreau or do you want to watch the animated? Again, they are two very different films, but which one appeals more to your interest?
Yeah, I guess it would depend on my mood at that moment. Probably if it was, like, you know, the middle of a Sunday afternoon, I might enjoy the lighter cartoon feel.
Okay.
But if, like, I was going to invite people over or we were going to have, like, a movie night, I would definitely throw on the Jon Favreau one because it is more of a heavier kind of tone, you know, not in a bad way, but
no, it feels it
realistically,
I think, fuller.
Yeah.
It feels fuller. And I'm really curious now because in a couple of years, Andy Serkis, the king of mocap, is to release his Jungle Book, and his Jungle Book is going to be directly the Rudyard Kipling. Like, I believe almost a 1-to-1 for the most part. Like, imagine someone was making a Shakespeare film. I want to say that's where he is going with that, and I'm very curious as to how that goes. I'm interested in it, but I wasn't expecting so much of the Kipling in this book. I'm sorry, not in this book, in this film. For instance, Favreau was interviewed recently by IGN, and they asked him, you know, what did you need, you know, feel need to change, you know, from the original film to this? And he wanted to bring in more of that mythal, you know, that myth that they had in the Peace Rock.
Yeah, we have a Peace Rock.
You know, stuff like that. The way that the elephants are portrayed in this film is vastly different than the way that they're portrayed in the Disney film. Everything towards and, that, you know?
Even the changing of the King Louis.
Yeah,
King Louis is a very, very different character as well. And what is he now?
A Gigantopithecus.
Yeah. Gigantopithecus. So it's an extinct.
It was an instinct, but the thing was, orangutans are not native to where the Jungle Book takes place. So he wanted something that was along those lines, but also was known to be in that area. So that was the Gigantopithecus.
Yeah. So the law of the pack and all that kind of stuff. You know.
Yeah. Did you get the I don't know if you have it to talk about later, but the Richard Sherman, how he had to change some of the lines for the song.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I did not read that, but I'm curious about that because there's some line changes that they had to do to make things fit better with this. But so now I'm curious, like, what does that film do? What does the 1 and 2 years do? Because this wasn't just, hey, we took the 67 film and remade it.
Definitely
they
not.
They expanded upon it very greatly and very largely leaning on the Kipling side of things. So, I guess it's pretty obvious answers to everybody, but number one, would you refer the film to friends and would you say you got to go see this in a theater? Maria, how about you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't see it in 3D. I actually wanted to see it as a regular movie to see how much it was going to really hook me. And it did from the very first second I was hooked in. I would love to see it again in 3D. And I'm not usually a big 3D movie fan, but I think this one deserves to be seen in 3D as well. But I definitely, definitely suggest to go see it in the movie. Don't wait for the DVD. Just go out and enjoy it at the movie theater.
Yeah, I agree as well. I mean, I've told people who I know aren't even Disney fans, like, you need to go see this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, it's not even, you know, as they interviewed Jon Favreau and they said, do you see this as a reimagination or a retelling? And he said, well, it's kind of like both. You know what I mean? It's a mix of both worlds. So it's, you don't even really have to know the folklore of the Jungle Book, the original one, to just enjoy the film.
Yeah.
So I would definitely recommend it.
I would 100% recommend everyone to check this out, Disney fan or not. This was a movie, especially a movie I think you should see. This is one of those theater experience movies that you really need to do that.
Yeah, and from having seen it in 3D, it was fantastic. The way that they used 3D was perfect. So 100% in the theater with good sound and 3D 100% of the way.
If you can find a theater with sharp 3D, a large screen, and Dolby Atmos, that would be the way that I would suggest seeing it. I 100% think this is a go see it in the theater film.
Yeah, because Favreau also had said that he wanted to do the sound like the what Disney did for Fantasia.
The Fantasound.
Fantasound. Mm-hmm. Yep. And that it's very similar to Dolby Atmos.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like when the music's going around, you hear it coming from
It's basically, it's a 360, well, not a 360 because it's not coming from below your feet, but it's a dome sound. It's more than just 7.1, 5.1. The sound should be coming from above you and whatnot. Not every theater has Dolby Atmos, but there are a number that do. If you call and ask, they can tell you whether or not your local theater has one. But 100% go see this in the theater. If you're not a Disney fan, I'm strange as to why you're listening to the show, but hey, how are you? but even if you're not a Disney fan, if you want to bring someone who's not a Disney fan, let them know. Your interest in Disney has nothing to do with whether or not you will enjoy this film. So I have a huge recommendation from all of us here. And with that being said, I would like to talk about some more specific details. So for now, I'm going to say that we are going to go into spoiler territory. And from here on out, we're going to talk about little details, specifics to the plot, blah, 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 blah. Okay, we're in the clear. So, what do we want to talk about first? I want to talk about the opening.
Yeah. I was going to say, we have to start there.
You got to start at the beginning.
We have to start right at the beginning because this film, right from the start, I always love the way different films do the Disney logo interpretation.
Yeah.
I remember Tron was really, really great. Yeah. Tomorrowland was a really nice one. This one, though, had a different feel to it. Was it? Did it have like that old 67 animated look to it?
I yes. almost felt like it was like a 2D paper almost kind of feel. Like.
Yeah, I actually have the thing on it.
Yeah.
It's, they used... sorry. They says Disney lets you change the logo, so we designed a logo that's actually cel-painted.
Oh.
Hand-painted, and the composer actually redid the opening Disney theme to give it that, you know, older feel.
Okay, so that's they are actually using the technique of old.
Right.
Yep. To then introduce you into this new world based on an older film.
Yeah, so we go from cel-painted castle with hand-painted fireworks and flames on the torches, and we pull back into something that eventually becomes a photoreel shot
of the castle.
Right.
Okay, and then the camera pulls further back, and we find ourselves in the jungle, and within the same movement, Mowgli is jumping onto the screen.
Yep.
Immediately, it's like, oh, all right, this let's go.
Here we go, yeah.
Like, this is really just a perfect opening for this film, I felt. And I got excited, which is cool. And, I mean, granted, I'm a sucker for those opening shots, but this, again, it felt that the people who were behind it really cared.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like, hey, this is something from the film. Get it? Because that would have been different. Then it would have just been the logo amongst trees.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, or something like that. They would have made King Louis's castle
into the Disney castle.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't this. They actually said, like, let's go back to the old hand painted the way they did it when they made this original film.
Yeah.
And that's how we're going to start our feeling off. So, Maria, with this opening, did it grab you as well?
Absolutely, I agree 100%. It felt almost like an homage to Disney. Like, okay, this is the old Disney, and now we're taking you with us into this new world that we created for the Jungle Book. And I loved it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And the very beginning with the chase scene for Mowgli was terrific. Like, he got me hooked from the very beginning. It was so fast paced. It was high energy, and it was the perfect way to start a movie. And there was a part of me I was like, it better hold on to this, because you started on a really good note. And it did for me. But I thought it was great. And in this chase scene and also in the other one, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, with the monkeys, it felt like the camera move, it almost felt like you were one of the animals running with him. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that as well, like, because immediately it felt like, okay, I'm part of the movie. So I enjoyed that very much.
What was, I mean, Melissa, you know, with the monkey chase scene, it makes me think of King Louis and the kind of different interpretation of King Louis in this film. What would you say was your favorite character in this film with all the different changes?
Ooh, that's a hard one, because I really actually enjoyed the addition of Lupita Nyong'o's character, Raksha. I
as
felt
the
like,
dead mother?
Yeah, as the wolf mother who raised Mowgli. I feel like her presence and her constant, even when she's not with Mowgli, she still cares for him. So the whole, you know, you get the whole dynamic of the pack, but you get her dynamic with him and how he fits in that world. I felt like it was a great inclusion of his life in the wolf pack, because I felt like in the animated film, it wasn't really there as much.
No, he was just kind of, he was like Tarzan.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like in this one, I liked how he was there with her and then with the other, you know, wolf pups and just his whole interaction. I was really glad with this addition of her character.
Actually, you know, I take that back, because even Tarzan, I mean, well, in the Disney animated, the connection with his mother is actually quite strong. Mm-hmm. But yeah, her line, "You are my son," or "You will always be my son."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was one of the best delivered, like the most emotionally punching line, maybe
that made
film.
Me like yeah, that I was like, oh, like,
yeah,
yeah, no, that made me feel
for a normally when I talk about voice acting and I talk about like impact, I'm impacted by people with like strong voices, you know. Obviously Idris Elba was probably my favorite character in this one.
He was, yeah,
because his voice is just so perfect and so rich for this, and he made Shere Khan feel like a threat, not just like a dopey tiger.
No, he was really a bad guy.
He was on it. But the thing is, Lupita Nyong'o has obviously a female voice, but her voice has weight to it.
Yeah.
You know, like when she says her dialogue, there's real weight to it, and it's hard to do that. with such a strange way that, you know, voice acting and all that can work, and, you know, just being like dots on a screen and having to really emotionally connect with somebody. But she is one of those people, because her work as Maz, you know, in Star Wars,
The Force Awakens.
You know, she's got some really, you know, heavier lines in that one too, you know, as far as like Star Wars lore goes. So she was really good. But I would say Idris Elba was probably the standout to me in a movie that was filled with standouts. But Shere Khan being a threat made the film more exciting for me, because if there's no threat, I'm like, he'll get through it.
Yeah.
But there was a genuine like, wow, he could kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
He could kill them all, and everyone knows it.
Yeah.
You know, even facing up against him at the final, they barely make it out.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Scott, what about you? Favorite character?
My favorite is King Louis. I just...
Okay, great.
Walken's voice, the song, just that whole scene with the temple and, you know, his little speech that he gives Mowgli before, it just was... That was my favorite part.
He had his eyes.
Yeah.
That was...
He did. That was
Christopher Walken's eyes.
It was,
without doubt, that was Walken's eyes. I was so pleasantly surprised with the addition of the music. I was not expecting it.
Me neither.
And then when they went into the Bare Necessities, I got giddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was fun.
And then I knew when Louie was coming around, my brain was like, no, they're going to really do that? They're going to do this too?
Yeah.
So I got excited. And then you just hear the music creeping in. You know, that little jazz beat just creeping in slowly. And I was like, oh, shit, they're going to actually do this.
Yeah. And it was like in the middle of his speech, and then he started into the song, you know?
And it's great.
Like, oh, my God, he's actually going to sing.
Yeah, that's like classic American musical. I mean, there's only two musical numbers, but no one makes mention of it.
No, and it's not forced at all. It's not like they just, like, you know, we need to get a musical number in here. It's just it naturally evolves from what's going on in the story, and it's great.
And it's laid in by when Baloo says, you know what a song is?
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, you know, this is something new for Mowgli, and it was something new, quote-unquote, for us as the Watcher, was seeing this photorealistic jungle and then having this song that I wonder if someone is 100% unawares of the previous film. Has no idea what the Bare Necessities is, has no idea I Want to Be Like You. You throw them in this film, how do those two musical numbers come off? That's a really interesting thing that it would be really hard to... Well, actually, wait a minute. Did Kyle ever see the original Jungle Book?
We haven't watched the original Jungle Book yet, but I mean, he does know the songs just from engulfed in Disney since he was old enough to understand anything.
So then I can, we'll have to find somebody. I want to find somebody whose kids or whatever, like just someone who just never was aware of it.
Yeah.
But Brian, what was your favorite character in this film?
It was Shere Khan. Also, I mean, he was. It was the bad guys were, I thought, the best. Scarlett Johansson was great in her very little limited part that she had. Was really, I thought she did a great job. But Shere Khan, he was everything you needed him to be. You know, he was scary.
Yeah.
You know, he was manipulative in terms of, you know, with the five, with the man's red flower, you know, stuff like he attacked the guy in the cave that we get to later on, but like he turns it around like it was the man who did it.
But it was really just
you know, it was the man's fault. He was spot on. Christopher Walken King Louis and Bill Murray as Baloo having their exchange was I had this like big smile on my face. And I had read that most of the cast didn't do their lines together. But Walken and Murray, he had in the studio at the same time
to do their
stuff together, because this way they could play off of each other's facial expressions and stuff. And that was the one he really wanted to have them do their lines together.
And actually, I saw a photo of them with Dr. John.
Yes, yes.
And Dr. John does the I Want to Be Like You version. No, wait a minute. Yes. Nope, he does the Bare Necessities.
The Bare Necessities.
Version during the credits. Maria, what would you, if you just wanted a single point at a character in this film that you felt was the strongest aspect for you, who would you point at?
I loved Shere Khan. I thought it was fantastic. I love how dark they made the tiger, how even physically, like how beat up he was. Like he was pretty scary looking.
Yeah,
he was real imposing.
Yeah, and I love that. I thought, you know, there's a brand new villain in town, and I thought he was delicious. I love the voice work that Elba did. there was something about that tiger that just I couldn't stop looking at him. It almost became the heart of the movie for me, more than Mowgli. And I found it fascinating. I thought he was fantastic at what he did.
Yeah, he had a battle-worn look to his fur and stuff.
Well, yeah, because he had the burn scars on his face, and one of his eyes was...
Well, yeah, but that was all from the burn, but I'm talking about, like, more beyond that.
Yeah, he looked, like, bedraggled. Like, he wasn't, like, a big, fluffy, you know, pretty cat that you'd see in,
like he'd clean blood off himself on more than a couple of occasions.
Like, this tiger's seen things.
Well, they said he kills for, like, pleasure instead of necessity.
Well, I mean, just that goes back to when he goes to... Akilah,
yeah.
And he says, you know, he's left. We have no quarrel. And he's like, I told you I wanted him dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want him gone. I want him dead.
Yeah. I'm rooting for him. Kill kids. Yeah. That's all about.
I actually really just also want to talk about Ben Kingsley's voice.
Oh, my God. He's our narrator.
So perfect. Yeah. The opening with him narrating, like, chills. I love his voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was one of the most perfect castings that you could have done, because he has that regal, you know, kind of sound that a panther you would think has, you know, the black sleeky, you know, panther. But then he also has that, he can be menacing, like when he talks to Shere Khan, or even when he's trying to be forceful with Baloo, like, you know, he has that again, authority to his voice.
Does have an authority to his voice. The man can say no like none other.
Yes, he can.
Has, if you haven't, and you can, and you're of age and whatnot, see the movie Sexy Beast.
I love that movie. Oh my God.
You want to see Shere Khan in human form? It's pretty much Sexy Beast. Ben Kingsley is, he's never, like, he's not a physically imposing guy. He's well in shape and all that, but he's not, you know, huge. And in Sexy Beast, he's opposite Ray Winstone, who is physically imposing, but just makes Winstone look like a child in the fury and just the rocket-type anger that he shows in that film. And there's a part where he gets defensive and says no a number of times. If you're ever curious, just go to Google and search for Ben Kingsley, no, no, no. Trust me, it will come up in the video section. All right, and check it out. And then see Sexy Beast as a movie, because it's absolutely fantastic. One of the best twisted thrillers ever made. I absolutely love it. What else? You know, give me something else, Brian, that stuck out specifically for you in this film, or anybody. Actually, I really thought it was interesting to find out that the way that Mowgli goes and gets honey is the way that a tribe, a specific jungle tribe that Jon Favreau looked into, gets honey.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they actually, like, you know, they hang themselves from a cliff and cut it off, and they have to protect it because bees. And that was how he came up with that scene with Mowgli getting the honey.
Mm-hmm. I loved how, like, going back to even, like, when Mowgli was getting the water with the, you know, the shell, that it was like, you know, don't use your tricks. Like,
yeah, don't use your tricks.
Do what a human would naturally do, use tools and things like that. Like, that's not the wolf way. That's not the jungle way.
Yeah, but then the moment where Bagheera says to him during the finale, you can't hunt as a wolf.
Yeah, you can't fight him like a wolf. Fight him like a man.
And then he pauses. He's like, fight him as a man. I was like, oh, that was good. I had chills when I heard that one.
Yeah, that was good.
And again, that's Kingsley just knowing how to do everything perfectly. It's so insanely annoying. It's so great.
You know what I like? I picked up a lot of... There was a lot of little, like... I know there's a lot of different little Easter egg type stuff that was in it, but there was a fair number of Lion King, like, little nods in there, I thought. The meerkat and the warthog standing together, of course.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious,
That stampede.
The stampede.
The stampede that Mowgli jumps into. And then also when Shere Khan fell... It was very reminiscent of Scar's.
Yeah, falling into the fire and all that. Well, at least in Lion King, the look of fire.
In a book, yes, yeah, yeah.
Actually, I want to say that Favreau made mention of using elements. He wanted to use more elements of Lion King and Tarzan.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And the original book to bleed into this new kind of telling of this. Maria, what was, you know, outside of the performances, what was a specific thing of the film or a scene that particularly jumped out at you, a change, anything that you thought was clever or that you felt really helped the film?
They had a lot of great moments. I did love the whole King Louis moment, and I was nervous about it because, I mean, I love Christopher Walken, But I was like, I hope I'm not gonna just watch Christopher Walken.
Yeah. You don't want him parodying himself.
You know what I mean? I didn't. And the thing is that, you know, for example, with Baloo, I did have a problem with Baloo because for me, Bill Murray, his voice was just way too recognizable. And it kind of took me out of his performance as Baloo. So he wasn't my favorite. Baloo definitely wasn't my favorite. But it didn't happen with King Louis for me. Like from the very first line, actually, you don't hear the specific Christopher Walken talk at the very, very beginning. It comes in during the song. You definitely hear it's Christopher Walken, but it's not as specific, especially at the very beginning. And so that I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed even the CGI of the giant monkey was pretty amazing, I have to say.
Yeah, and again, I think the eye work was really, really something
that really,
very specific.
That, I really noticed that, the eyes. And I like that they gave a Christopher Walken nod when Mowgli first gets there, before he even meets King Louie, when he picks up the cowbell.
And he
just is kind of
I was wondering
why
that was there, and my brain kind of snapped. I was like, We're doing a cowbell reference,
and I was like, "Oh, that's nice because it doesn't take away from it's something he would have, but it's a nice little nod."
Yeah,
to,
it's not
to
distracting.
Who's coming up?
Yeah, it's not distracting because it didn't take me out of it. Now, Maria, I shared your worry with Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what was that?
Up, Dr. Seuss.
Hey-o. I shared that worry as well when I heard about the casting because Bill Murray basically is the real life Baloo. But because of that, I was fine with what he did, and I thought that he played a lot more dopier version of himself. But I can see where you're coming from, and I could see somebody saying that they weren't able to get past Christopher Walken because Christopher Walken. Mm-hmm. You know, he has kind of become a parody of himself in the way that sometimes Will Shatner allows him to, like for comedy purposes.
Yeah, for comedy purposes, yeah.
But, you know, the who's more impersonated than... You know, Christopher Walken's speaking way.
Yeah,
you know?
No, probably no one.
So, I thought they, for me, it was fine on both ends. But who else? Who else wants to say something? Like a specific thing? Melissa?
Well, I actually like the change with Ka, actually. I know. No.
What? That's the wrong one.
No? Okay.
I mean, she had a much smaller part, but her part was actually so pivotal to the movie that I really enjoyed it. I liked how it wasn't now like a goofy, dopey snake that was just, you know, trying to be Shere Khan's lackey. I liked that they actually really didn't interact at all.
Yeah.
I loved the imaging that they did with her eyes because I was like, how are they going to do like the hypnotizing?
I was curious about that too. I was waiting for it and then I thought it looked so cool. Like, it was like looking at gasoline on the ground where it gets that mirrory kind of look. That's what I thought of.
Yeah, like it wasn't as cartoony as it could have been, but it was so perfect that you could almost see that happening in nature, like the eyes changing that color at that pulse. And then I loved how you went into her eyes and saw the backstory.
Yeah, she was like our exposition, basically.
Yeah.
Like they made Ka the exposition thing. And actually, that scene also reminded me of a story that you recently told. It wasn't on the show or anything, but you must have read an article or whatnot. There was a woman who was she had a boa constrictor or a python in her house.
Oh, yeah.
And the boa constrictor would, like, she would think it would cuddle her at night.
Uh-huh.
And all it was doing was sizing up whether or not it could eat her.
Yeah, like seeing how big it would have to, how long it'd have to go without food in order to eat her.
Yeah, and I thought that was really interesting how during the whole, I'm just going to tell you the story of how you got here.
Yeah.
And then as you come back to it, you have that. And Johansson has, in my book, one of the best voice acting performances ever in the movie Her. And here she brings obviously a sensuality. You can't help it. The woman speaks and she has that voice. And then hearing her sing
at the end.
The Trust in Me song during the credits. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is great. Yeah. I'm like, so they got this song. Even though the movie starts with touches of the Trust in Me song.
Yeah, they use it a lot throughout.
They use it a lot. Like, when you're going through the castle and stuff, there's a lot of Trust in Me in there. And I don't know if that was Favreau literally, like, telling the audience, like, trust in me. I like,
oh, my gosh.
I can just see Favreau doing that, actually. It'd be really fucking hysterical. Yeah. But I thought it was just perfect casting on that part. And,
yeah.
She was dangerous. And Blue murders the shit out of that snake.
You think he murders her?
Oh my god, yes.
Oh, yeah. I just thought he kind of like made it so she wasn't going to be around. All right,
maybe. Because, you know, we can talk about this too now. They leave. The ending is different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
The ending is different. I never understood the ending of the 67 book.
I never liked that.
I was like, what's she like? She tricked him into following her, and now he's like man's captive. I was this is not what I want. Like, this isn't what I wanted.
No.
If he would have went there on his own,
that would have been different.
You know, but it kind of felt like she tricked him into it at the end of the film. I love the final shot of this film of, you know, Bagheera, him, Mowgli and Baloo sitting up on the tree.
Yeah.
That is, and I believe that's an original anime drawing from the book.
It is. I read something about that also, that Disney had to find, because they had the book. So they, Favreau could not like touch the book. They couldn't touch it. So Disney had people there with like white, like with gloves on, and
they had like a first edition.
The book. Oh, and that's cool. That last page was they put it. You know, they had to put it on. He recreated the table with the blue cloth, and they put the book on it. And you know how it kind of like pops, like jumps. There was a guy underneath the table hitting it with a broom to pop the book up,
because
they couldn't, because
cool.
They couldn't touch it. Like, they weren't able to touch it. So that's how they made that scene.
Oils in your hands naturally will then disintegrate.
So like
damage paper.
So no one could touch except for the guy with the gloves. And then that's how they did that to make the pages flip.
That's so cool. Maria, what do you think about now the open ending that leading us to what undoubtedly will be a follow-up film?
Yeah, obviously they left it open. Yes, it's pretty clear. I enjoyed it. I actually prefer this ending to the original Disney movie. Absolutely, I think it's more. I don't know. It felt free.
It's more in line with the story with him. You know,
it's
like
what he wanted.
It's what he wanted. Yeah. So it's more in line with that, as opposed to the other one was kind of a downer. The original ending.
Yeah,
you know,
I feel like he's done.
Yeah,
like. Like, we know man. There's nothing interesting there.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's it. His life, in an interesting way, just ended. That's it.
Yeah, so. And it's interesting because he goes to the village by himself to get the fire. So he's there, but he doesn't stay.
Yeah, and they leave man in shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we never get a clear shot of a person. We never see a girl. I was a little worried we were going to see a girl during that scene, honestly. Now, if we come back, let's let this kid grow up a little bit.
We
come back in like 4 or 5 years, and he grows the way some kids do nowadays, and he almost looks like a teenager. Is that something you want to see, Scott? Like, do you want to see a Jungle Book 2 with an older Mowgli who's really starting to have like the call to, maybe now he's so important to the jungle that him leaving would impact the jungle in a very negative way, but at the same time he feels like the call of humanity. Really, really imposing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would go very well, especially with it being, the live action. I think it would be,
I think that I would definitely want to say that he created a world that I want to go back into.
The jungle.
The jungle book. And like you said, there's a number of stories, right?
The Jungle Book is like a two-part book, really. And
but aren't they like a collection of stories, the books?
It's more like a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like an anthology?
Anthology, it's more of an anthology, where the story of Mowgli does go through all of it, but there's portions of the book where Mowgli and Baloo are not in it at all.
Yeah, so I'm saying, so they can maybe pull
elephant stuff, actually, if I remember correctly. Yeah, the elephants are they're hard to read, actually, sometimes. Yeah. I read it when I was younger. I still have it, actually. I wonder if the drawings are in there, in that version that I have. Melissa, is this a movie you want to revisit in a couple of years?
You mean
a sequel? I apologize. A world you want to revisit?
Yeah, no, the world for sure. It's definitely an interesting world. I definitely enjoyed even the myth of the elephants and how they they're part of the jungle. So to see now Mowgli fully immersed and accepted in that, but now he's older. Now what?
And how adorable was that little elephant?
Oh god, that was so cute.
It was adorable. He was maybe the most animated looking.
Like cartoony
looking, because he had very like human. He didn't have human eyes. I don't know why. It was just something. It reminded me, though, of the 67 character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If I had to pin it down. Maria, is this a film that you hope... Well, you're going to get a sequel. Would you want, like, an older Mowgli? Do you want them to make it sooner than that? How would you want them to tackle a part two? Because, unfortunately, I feel like they'll just fire it out of a cannon and we'll get it in a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you could, how would you like to see The Jungle Book 2 come about?
I don't know. It feels like, if even though it was an open ending, it felt very complete for me. That I'm not really interested in seeing teenage Mowgli going through his own madness, you know, and his teenager's years. I'm not really interested in that. I kind of like it that he left an open ending, and you know, for the audience to think whatever they want to think, to actually, you know, use their own imagination and create their own stories. I'm sure we're going to have a second one. I'm interested to see what they'll come up with. But, you know, right now, if I think about it, it's like, okay, how many stories, how many ideas we can come up with? He's going back to the village and he becomes, you know, part of the humans, or he stays there. I mean, there are really two or three endings that they can go with. And right now, I'm like, I just feel very satisfied with this movie. It stands on its own, and I'm not craving a sequel right now.
The only thing that I would, if they do wait until he's a teenager, I would miss. I really enjoyed Mowgli, the kid,
mm-hmm.
And I thought he was so good. I would love to see him again, and I would feel if he did do it when he's a teen. Like if they wait a few years, then we're not going to get him again. So I kind of want them to do it in his age currently. Yeah, or even maybe like in, you know, if they wait like 2 or 3 years. But I would like to see him back again, as the actor, because he was
production wise. It would be 2 years. This film isn't one you can just let's go to this location, boys.
Well, no, of course,
you know. So like that's a thing. Like the CG work would take so long afterwards, and God knows what CG is going to look like in 3 more years.
Yeah, I don't even know,
because it just keeps going by leaps and bounds. Just to wrap up, let's just talk about the ending sequence. Not in that the fight with Shere Khan and all that, mm-hmm. but when that classic-looking Disney book, the way that we've seen so many films open recently on films that we reviewed on Disney Magic Hour, we close on that, and then we get this pop-up book that now me and Melissa were the only two to see in 3D. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. I saw 2D.
Man, was this cool in 3D. Like, this was, all right, if you're going to literally put a pop-up book in front of me for the pop-up factor of 3D as fun at the end of the film, you know what you're doing with 3D. Like, I don't know why. I just feel like Favreau gets it the way that people who are also in the industry don't. He feels more down-to-earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he actually understands humans.
Yeah.
There are some people in Hollywood that they're just such in their bubble. Mm-hmm. They've never known anything but it.
Yeah.
And they have just coldness towards real people.
I think it's part of the way he came into the industry and stuff like that. You know, I think that's a big deal with that. And he's turning into, but from Chef in this, I mean,
He's all grown up.
I got to tell you something.
You're all grown up.
Yeah. He's going to be on my list when we do our thing next week because he just gets it. And his movies have such like a love to them. Even Elf. I mean, for that movie to be as good as it is and as entertaining as it is for the premise that it came with, that was pretty damn good because that movie should not have worked at all. But you know, he really did something. He's just got a way. The way he makes films, I really enjoy.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I would suggest everyone who didn't see it in 3D, I would actually say go see it.
Yeah, I think I might have to go back and see it in 3D now.
I think it's worth the extra trip to the theater to go see it in 3D. Does anyone have any other last notes they want to speak of towards this film at all, Maria?
Overall, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Again, it surprised me. I wasn't expecting something this good. And so I really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the CGI as well. I thought it was great. I mean, there are moments that it's a little weaker, but I think overall they did a great job with all the animals. They look fantastic. And I cried too. So it made me cry at the end when you see Mowgli coming back on top of the elephant. I got all teary eyed. I was like,
oh. Okay.
Yeah, it touched me. So I really enjoyed it.
Scott, any final words?
Like I said before, I just love the fact that they did this and they made it to be the way that, you know, these animals really are. Mm-hmm. You know, even with the elephants, you know, they said, you know, Baloo says to Mowgli, I've never seen anyone get that close to an elephant, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, it makes me feel like they did a lot of research into the book as well as, you know, nature in general as to, you know, the real veracity of these animals.
Yeah, they definitely did. The care and attention that they took for each individual animal, the habits, the, you know, the fact that there's talking live animals and it didn't look weird, you know, was brilliant. And yeah, there's a couple of little CGI moments where you could tell like the animals didn't have as much weight as they should in the nature. But
I noticed a couple of hitchy moments. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I don't know how a panther works with Bagheera. That there was only one or two moments though. But
I've mentioned it with Shere Khan over by the water rock with the water truth thing.
Okay.
But yeah, but overall, but then, you know, they also did really great stuff where his paw's in the water and the water does splash up and he leaves a really heavy footprint in the sand. Mm-hmm. So there were definite parts that were, you know, the detail was perfect. And the rain on the wolves was gorgeous. That whole scene.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, for a movie that was entirely CG, I mean, it was outstanding. Just go see this movie if you haven't. That's it.
Yeah, that's my final word on it, is just go see it, guys. We got a good one here. I think it's for everyone, not just Disney fans. And it's a film that will work for a long time to come. A long time to come. So, what else do we want to talk about? Is that about it?
We have the review.
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right, guys. I feel pretty good about this. Oh, review. We got to read the review.
And also just that this is going to...
Did you take a photo of it, Brett?
I did.
Oh, okay.
This is going up early, but we're not going to have another one later in the week.
Oh, yeah, guys. This is Monday that we're releasing this, and we will not be releasing another one on Thursday. This is our show for the week, but we wanted to get this up there nice and early for you because maybe you want to go see it this weekend or something like that. So
33.
Yes. Wow. Okay. GS DJ did. That's a lot of letters. GS DJ Jinden. The show is really good. It's funny and informative. I love all the shows you do. I hope you guys keep up the great work. By the way, can you do a podcast with Lou Mangiello? Have a nice day. Thank you so much for the review. And we actually have had Lou on the show a couple of times previous. Melissa, do you remember which episodes those were?
Yeah, it was episode 14 and episode 30. 14 was the D23 review, and 30 was the 2016 movie preview, where we did talk about Jungle Book.
Yeah, and you can actually go to that now, and we're going to be coming up on a lot of the films that we were speaking about. They're starting to line up, so if you want to go back, that was episode number...
30.
Episode number 30. I would definitely go back and take a listen to that, and with all the releases starting to line up, we did that early in the year, and you can figure out, you can hear which ones we dig the most and whatnot. Now, I've been on Lou's show a couple of times, and I was there for the top films that you should see before going to Walt Disney World, and I was also on for
Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars in Disney parks, basically. We were talking about what we were doing, and that was right around the turn of New Year's.
It was, yeah, it was after The Force Awakens came out.
Yeah.
It was like a week or two after The Force Awakens.
Yeah, late December. So you can go and check those out as well. And hey, man, we actually were going to have him actually on the show last week, but he's very, very busy right now. He's traveling a lot. He's got a very busy schedule. But, you know, we will definitely have Lou back on the show again soon. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but we're going to talk. Ooh, well, well, there are a couple of movies that I know that he would like to have a word on.
Mm-hmm.
But till then, we'll see what happens. Thank you guys so much for listening this week and every other week. I wanted to just share a quick little thing. We cracked 4,300 listeners between this and our Film Basement show just recently. And the number has been increasing for a while now. And we're really thankful. I don't know how newcomers are hearing about the show and how that's working out. I thank everyone who's been sharing it and all that great stuff. And if you want to help the show out, the two biggest ways that you can do it is sharing it on your social networks and your Facebook and your Twitter, and, you know, going to iTunes and giving that 5-star review, because that will eventually get us on the chart. And that's very, very important. And we're a very small show. You know, we have like no budget and everything. And the fact that you guys have latched on so nicely, it's been really cool. Come on over to Facebook, to the Disney Magic Hour, the group page that we have there. Really active, really a lot of fun. No bullshit also over there. Like, we're not there to cry about the fact that popcorn is a different vendor it's just not that.
No, it's not that.
You know, it's there to have some fun, have, you know, joke with each other, have a good time, and come on over and join that group, and you'll make that group even bigger than it already is. And I just want to say thank you so much. So we're going to keep going at it, and me and Mel will be moving to the Central Florida area in less than 2 months now. And when we do that, we're going to have a lot more stuff in the parks. So the show is going to be expanding. It's going to be really, really cool.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
It'll be a lot of fun. See, you can hear the excitement in Melissa's voice. You want to give that a second try? Oh, that's, oh, I'm going to do director. All right, you know, that was a little soft.
Fly ball.
That was a little soft.
Cut.
Let's do that again. And just a little more energy, okay? So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
See? Now that sounds like more sarcastic.
That's it.
We got to go third time. All right, so not so much, not over the top. I just want you to come right in the middle. Like, you're actually excited. You know, you want
to,
so you know?
What we're trying to say is Mel might not have a voice acting career based off of this right here.
No, I'm going to get her in the right place. Like, okay. This is literally the place you wanted to move to for, like, the last, I don't know, 7 years. So now you're finally moving down there. How does that sound to you?
Anxiety. No.
All right, never mind. All right, guys. What? No.
It is going to be. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey! Human being. There she is. Don't worry about it. I know it's nerve-wracking. Don't worry. It's going to be fine. They're going to lose all of our stuff. We're going to have to buy all new crap. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's good.
I hate you.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in this week and every week that you always do. Right now, you are listening to No Worries by Pogo. You can find this video and more over at youtube.com/Pogo. His music is at soundcloud.com/PogoMix, and his website is pogomix.net. Who are we? We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter at lastgenpodcast, where you can find links to all of our shows that are all on our network. For our show in particular, for Disney stuff, you go to at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That is at D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. God damn it, I wish that name was smaller. If you head on over to Facebook, you can find us in the Disney Magic Hour group. Search for that and we'll let you in the gates as long as you're not selling garbage. And of course, head on over to iTunes, hit that subscribe button, 5-star review. We will read it on the air and thank you very much. I want to thank Maria Riboli for taking time out of one of your few days off for joining us today for this nice little special edition review of The Jungle Book. Thank you so much for jumping on with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
And we will have you on again and again and again, because that's how we do things here. So until then, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Scott.
Goodnight, Scott.
Say goodnight, Maria.
Goodnight, Maria.
Goodnight, Pete. Say goodnight, Pogo. Said goodnight the whole time. Usually we say goodbye.
No, you say goodnight.
Yeah, but it's the middle of the afternoon.
It's middle of the afternoon. It's
makes
weird.
It a little weird.
Have a nice day, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye. Nothing.